Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and today I'm joined by Marius Rett. Marius, how are you?
How's Nick? How's it going?
It's going all right. I apologize because there's almost certainly going to be background noise from my end, and that is because it is really hot, and I've had to open all the doors and windows to stop myself turning into a sort of, you see, there's dogs barking and things like that. But anyway, we also are joined by Mr. Gabriel Krauser, who had his own technical difficulties and therefore is joining us, I think, from his cell phone, which is why his camera is a little bit odd. Gabriel, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. Suddenly foiled by our streaming platform, but happy that the phone can work as a stopgap, and my apologies for the sound quality.
It says as Sihle Ngobeni says, we're building the plane as we fly it, which I think is one of
Exactly.
my favorite phrases
And
that
we won't let
Sihle
the fight for liberty get sabotaged by technical difficulties. We'll MacGyver our way around it.
So let us talk about today's great threat to liberty. And that is, of course, the National Health Insurance. So we haven't talked about NHI as it is commonly known for a while, but recently one of its senior bureaucrats in charge of implementing it has spoken out about quite precisely what it will entail. And I don't think there's too much that's new here, and I can be corrected by my colleagues if there is. But he was very blunt about what the NHI is planning to do. So this is all comments from the National Health Insurance Fund developer, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who is now, or he's the former National Health Insurance Fund developer. He's now the Deputy Director General for the NHI. So NHI has been on the cards forever, and Crisp said, look, it's a long-term plan, but basically here are some of the things we want to do. And I'm sort of paraphrasing here. He says that South Africa spends too much of its GDP on healthcare, and that this money should be shifted into the public sector, that provincial budget should be consolidated into the national government budget, that private medical schemes should be what he calls consolidated, but I read as nationalized to basically make it so that all private healthcare spending is pretty much routed through government. Because he says one of the problems is we spend a lot of money on getting high outcomes for a small group of people, and that this needs to change. So basically, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I'll start with you, Gabriel. It sounds a lot here like he's sort of saying, you see, the real problem with South Africa's healthcare is that we're spending too much on these people. And if your grandma is sick with cancer, well, tough luck because we're going to spend the money on someone who has a better chance of survival. I don't know. What do you make of this, Gabriel?
Yeah, I think that's a fair evaluation. One correction I think is that Nicholas Crisp was appointed acting director general of the Department of Health. So he replaced Sandile Buthelezi, who, together with Zweli Mkhize, was embroiled in the Digital Vibe scandal and so were removed. And Crisp, long before his elevation to being the Director General of Health in South Africa, has made statements that have this very strong socialist bent. Basically, the problem is that there's too much inequality in health outcomes, and so what you need to do is kind of redistribute health away from the rich towards the poor, which does basically amount to the kind of triage that you were describing, where it means saying, if there's someone who has made a lot of money in their lives and they're old and they've got cancer and they want like a pretty special chemotherapy treatment that's going to cost millions, they shouldn't really get it because you could spend those millions on something else. I think that just in terms of this personnel point, this does fit into a broader pattern of the New Dawn, which in 2019, I remember you and I started calling the Red Dawn, Because basically, where Cyril Ramaphosa has had the power to make his own appointments, and the people that he's really sort of put his signature behind have largely been something like honest communists or honest socialists. So that, the first headline figure was Pravin Gordhan, who was not personally corrupt. He was not stealing money. There's no evidence that he's stealing money to put in his own back pocket. And that is not true of all of the finance ministers that came before. And okay, so it's like a step in the right direction to appoint someone who isn't personally stealing. But on the other hand, Pravin Gordhan, I don't think understands the market's ability to raise all ships and fixates on redistributing an ever-shrinking pie. Nicholas Crisp, I think, is just another addition to that Red Dawn. There's no good reason to think that he's personally corrupt, but he does have this vision. And Barry Shoup, who has become very important in advising the National Coronavirus Command Council in the last year, a Wits professor and very much of the sort of classic Wits ideology, I think is very much of one mind with Nicholas Crisp on this front. So we are looking at a new suite, in some sense, of A-list power brokers. And while they're not personally stealing, I think the big worry is that they're keen on stealing it all on behalf of our people. But that doesn't work out if you don't have, firstly, a much richer country than we do. And secondly, if you don't have an administration that's already very clean and effective. Places where nationalizing health has worked in Western Europe didn't first nationalize health and then deal with terrible corruption. They first got clean administrations. We're still really living in the shadow of life as to many, where 100 people are killed and no accountability is really to be had for that.
Exactly. What also strikes me about all of these plans is the sort of complete ignorance about, I think, some of the possible economic consequences here. So he talks about reallocating this money from the private sector. He basically says, look, we can take the 8.5% of GDP that's spent on medical costs in South Africa, and we can just immediately shift it like it's just changing the columns in an accounting book into the government sector, and there'll be sort of people will just move like chess pieces, and they will just comply with this. They won't change their spending patterns at all. And at the top, he also says that too much is spent on human resources. In other words, doctors and nurses, he thinks, might be getting paid too much, or specialists might be getting paid too much. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They're just going to leave the country if they can't get paid the rates they want to get paid. Marius, it just seems like complete madness.
And also just this way that other people's money is spoken about, as if it's like a big piggy bank that the government can just go use. I mean, so reading the article now, this is not direct quotes from Nicholas Crisp, so I'm not sure if this is exactly what he said. But the article says, he said the plan is to address the imbalance in the system by shifting the 250 billion rand, oh sorry, would move the lion's share of the billions of rand sitting in medical schemes into the same fund, which means a single healthcare fund. But the billions of rand sitting in medical schemes, it doesn't, number one, doesn't belong to the medical schemes, and it certainly doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to the individuals who put their money in there. It's basically their own savings that they've got and put into medical schemes for their health, healthcare needs and so on. It's not for the government to say, okay, thanks a lot, we're going to go move this money. And at the same time, that is money, this is people's after-tax money. This is people have decided, look, I want to have a medical aid, so I'm happy to pay my whatever, 3,000, 4,000 rand a month over and above my tax for my healthcare needs. So you've already paid your tax money. It should be going into a single fund or whatever you want to call it. And you are using this money over and above that. It's mind-boggling how the government seems to think that, this is actually money that people can just go use for, for whatever. And then also, I think this is a direct quote, and I think this is very telling. So what would mean is that instead of having 50% of the money being spent through medical schemes that cover 15 or 60% of the population, we'd have a far smaller number of people who are insuring themselves only for very high-end potential medical care. So is he saying that they want fewer people who are paying for their own medical care? Do they want to reduce that number and put more people onto the government system, the failing government system, which already can't handle the number of people that use it every day. I mean, it's actually mind-boggling. And you, this is, I think, a perfect example of where reality and ideology are meeting. It's you know, immovable object meeting an unstoppable force here. And, you know, we see what happens when ideology wins over reality. So that happens in places like Zimbabwe and Venezuela. Other times, you know, people come to their senses and, you know, reality wins out, for which benefits the country. But at the moment, this is certainly still an example of ideology trying to beat reality. It looks like ideology might lose. It also, actually, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, which showed that our government healthcare system should not be handling everybody's healthcare in the entire country. But we'll see what happens. We know that it's not often that the ANC and the government decides to look at reality instead of ideology.
So here's the kicker for me, right? You could maybe make some sort of argument saying, no, you're exaggerating all the economic problems and costs. This will work fine and it'll reduce inequality. But here's the thing. It won't really, because medical aids will still be allowed to exist. But what they'll do is they'll only be allowed to exist as a top-up, in other words, for services that are not covered by NHI. What that means is that only very expensive premium treatments will be covered by medical aids, which of course means that they will become extremely expensive because they'll be for very rich people. So in effect, you're going to take the middle class's healthcare, blow it up, and then leave only the super rich and the super elite with the ability to spend money on private medical aid. Have I got that right, Gabriel? And any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, dude, you're exactly right. I mean, and why is there so much inequality in the first place? It's precisely because all the red tape makes it impossible for small businesses to graduate into medium and large businesses, makes it impossible for banks to really extend the kinds of exploratory loans that they would if we were in a growing market. It makes gross fixed capital formation shrink, which means jobs shrink, which means, poor people have more dependents hanging onto them. It's harder for them to save up and invest and buy something that, you know, might usefully mix with their labor to get long-term dividends. There's a Japanese economist who likes to talk about financial socialism, which is basically where the government uses forms of nationalization and financial consolidation, I think was the term, the fancy term for nationalization, for socialist purposes that actually create the inequality or exacerbate the inequality that they're supposedly trying to reduce. My final thought is this. NHI is not something that we talked much about. Most South Africans seem to understand that if you pass this, you're going to chase away a lot of doctors and nurses, you're going to chase away a lot of the middle class, and you're going to put another nail in the coffin of the new South African project. So while the ideologues, as Marius mentioned, are still keen on going forward with it, they were kind of losing a bit of momentum. Along came coronavirus, and immediately government health officials said, this is a blessing in disguise. This is our opportunity to prove through our management of the whole procurement and, whether you're allowed to go outside or eat hot food or wear a bikini or whatever, we're going to prove to the country that we need one government to rule it all. And that'll be the basis upon which we build the NHI. And Ramaphosa made speeches to that effect last year saying, look how well we've done. The NHI is coming. We are still in a state of disaster. It's completely ridiculous. You look at the death and case numbers. They're through the floor. This can't make sense. We're still being run by the Coronavirus Command Council. The sooner we get rid of the Coronavirus Command Council, the more serious the obstacles are that we can erect in front of the rolling NHI steam train. So go to the irr.org.za, sign up for that petition. We're doing well on the numbers there, and we're writing to the president and to the NCCC and so on. Anyway, it's an immediate way to deal with the forthcoming problem of NHI.
Exactly. I just want to give a shout out to everyone who has subscribed, because recently we passed 7,500 subscribers. Still small numbers, but I think that we've seen some great growth this year, and I really just want to thank everyone for subscribing. And if you aren't subscribed, please subscribe. We do a show 4 times a week, and it's good fun, especially when we have episodes like yesterday's one, which I would recommend that you check out if you haven't already, where Herman Pretorius loses his mind near the end. It's quite funny. Anyway,
Shore is a great platform to launch off of.
Yeah, we can start he's gonna move into his doing a comedy career now, I'm sure. Probably pays better than what we do. But anyway,
South Africa has been through enough. South Africa has been through enough. We don't have Herman Pretorius starting a stand-up comedy career. Have our people not suffered enough?
Yeah, Morris, we've been saying for a long time it needs to get worse before it gets better. Maybe this would finally take us to the brink. Anyway, so let's talk about what's going on with coalitions. So everyone decided to hold the updates on their coalition talks today, basically. We had one from the DA, we had one from the EFF, and we also had some stuff from the Patriotic Alliance, also known as the PA. So the EFF said a number of things. Malema said stuff like that the EFF has decided to terminate talks with the ANC because the ANC wasn't complying with some of its demands, which included which included things like adopting its version of expropriation without compensation, and among other things, such as removing
Consultative
parts, right?
Yeah,
from the national anthem. Malema said that they had reached that EFF had reached some agreements with the IFP on a number of municipalities in KZN, and also with the MAP 16 group in Harrismith and the municipality around there, which means that the ANC is not going to be in that municipality anymore. He was asked a question about Action SA and whether he was willing to go into coalition with them. And he said, of course, no, it's all up to Mashaba, and that the door has never been shut for him. And then he said, quote, "That one," referring to Mashaba, "is a political illiterate, and we will hold his hand. We can't be angry with him." Then there was a EFF councillor who in the Western Cape, in that very northern Western Cape municipality, Matize Kama, voted with the DA, and Malema said that he would be punished for this. He said, quote, "He will know whether his ancestors are powerful or not, because no one votes according to their conscience in the EFF. Party members must follow the party line. Command and control comes from the Winnie Mandela House," which is the EFF headquarters. So presumably he's going to be fired. I saw he's a list councillor, not a ward councillor, so he's not going to be able to run again. So I don't know why he voted for the DA, but he got himself chucked out.
It tells me that the essence of democracy is really strong within the EFF.
Very democratic organization. Yeah. The DA, of course, also announced various things about the coalitions. They said that they had secured, I think, some deals in two municipalities, in Cedarburg, Matshisikama in the Western Cape. I think the Cedarburg First group, which is only active in that municipality, I think are even going to get the mayorship. I'm not 100% sure. Helen Zilla said that they had held bilateral talks with the Freedom Front Plus, ACDP, IFP, UDM, and that they had also talked to Action SA a little bit. Steen Hazen attacked Gayton McKenzie, the leader of the Patriotic Alliance, saying that the PA had made it clear that they were only interested in patronage and positions and didn't really care about service delivery. The DA also said that basically there's no deal yet on the metros, that it's all a bit too complicated and that no one has been able to find a solution yet. Also, the Knysna Council is deadlocked. And lastly, Gayton McKenzie in the Patriotic Alliance made a deal with the ANC in two Western Cape rural municipalities. The PA would vote for the ANC in Huntum municipality, and in Karoo Hoogland, they would be given the mayorship and basically full control of the municipality with ANC support. So here's what Gayton said. "We're changing the narrative. We can no longer blame other people if there are no jobs. We can no longer blame people if there are no houses. We are going to build schools for our people and build clinics. We have the power now. We're going to build our people. Go start your company, get your papers ready, because there are going to be potholes that need to be filled. It's going to rain jobs. We were fighting between Huntum and Karoo Hoogland municipalities. We suggested for the ANC to control Huntum, and we said, we'll vote with you and not interfere, but then give the PA their own municipality so we can do what we promised our people we would do." So I've dumped a lot of info on you guys there, but let's start with you, Marius. What are your thoughts on how the election stuff is going?
I just want to say, I think these power sharing agreements, in inverted commas, it's an absolute disgrace, actually, that municipalities are being traded like stickers in a playground. It's absolutely disgusting. Municipalities and councils don't belong to the various political parties to hand out and say, okay, we'll give you Huntsman, you give us Karoo, Hoogland, and whatever. That's not how it works. The people of Karoo, Hoogland, now the PA is apparently now, they're going to be running this municipality as if they won it outright. They won 20% of the vote in that municipality. It's an absolute disgrace that the ANC has gotten along with this. If they've gone into a proper coalition where the PA supports the ANC and the ANC gets a mayorship and the PA gets deputy mayor and the speaker or something like that, cool, you know, I can go along with it. But this, you know, it's also, it shows absolute contempt for the voters of these various municipalities to say, okay, this is our municipality now and you can have this one. It actually enrages me, and it shows you that the contempt that lots of our political parties hold the voters in. And it was the same thing with the EFF, where they said they'll take Tshwane, Action SA can get Joburg, and the ANC can get Ekurhuleni. But that's not how it works. The people of those metros didn't vote like that. They didn't vote, okay, cool, the EFF is a 10% party, you can govern Tshwane. That's not how it works. So, I mean, but apart from that, do you think the DA seems to be making the right noises here, I think. From what I've calculated, it's possible that they could run Tshwane with a coalition consisting of themselves, Action SA, the Freedom Front, the ACDP, and they'll need one more party, but there's COPE and the IFP too. Who knows what the IFP would do, but I mean, that gives them a majority of Tshwane.
I think COPE is the safer partner in that.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be interesting to see what the IFP does. I mean, are they going to go into formal coalitions with the EFF and KZN? The EFFs never seem to be too keen on that. I would imagine it's more these kind of confidence and supply agreements. That's also something that'll be interesting to see. So, yeah, overall, I think we're still in for some chaos, but I think this also shows that the Patriotic Alliance is just a bunch of rent seekers. I mean, there's a quote in the article you were reading from earlier. And so Gator McKenzie apparently said he noted the criticism that the party had received, but the PA refused to send opposition benches because no jobs or opportunities came from there. I think that's quite a tagline, I think.
Gabriel, your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, I briefly think that a very interesting thing is how parties define themselves by who they just won't go into coalition with. So the fact that the DA said very hard, like, we're not going to go into coalition with the ANC or the EFF, I think kind of set the tone from the opposition side. And the fact that Action SA has from the start said we won't go with the ANC, but maybe we'll go with the EFF, and then has changed to say, okay, we're not going with the EFF, has been an encouraging development. The ANC said they'll go into coalition with anyone, which I think is a sign of how desperate it is. The EFF finally said who it will not go into coalition with. And that is, surprisingly, the Patriotic Alliance. So in Julius Malema's speech today, he concluded his remarks by saying, the Patriotic Alliance, the PA, I'm very conflicted here. Because they, amongst other things, because they're very xenophobic. And they want to tell foreigners to go home. So it's kind of like, not exactly what the PA is the most famous for, usually. Action SA gets more of that flack, and there are actually a lot of parties that think illegal immigrants should be deported, some of them at least. Anyway, Malema then went on to the screed about how he will
he doesn't
resign.
Want ex-cons in his coalitions, right? He said you can't
do
business.
Yeah, that's part of it. But he really spent most of the time focusing on how, for him, the most important thing is black people. And when he sees a Zimbabwean, when he sees a Nigerian, when he sees a Ghanaian, he sees himself. And then he said white people are very angry with Julius Malema, and that's what makes him sleep nicely at night, because the enemy knows they can't buy him, they can't control him. So his speech amounted to saying sort of, you know, it's really white versus black for Julius Malema. And being on Team Black means you've got to be down with all foreigners in all ways, all the time. And actually, you need one Africa with one army, one fiscus, one reserve bank, and no borders between it. That's his explicit program. He said, if that's costing us votes, I'll resign. And I thought, in a way, it was a kind of shot across the bow to Herman Mashaba about where the EFF and Action SA, who I think were the closest to getting together and are right now sort of on opposite sides of the coalition negotiations, a sort of sense from Julius Malema about what Mashaba doesn't understand. As a political illiterate, the thing Malema wants to educate him about is that the enemy is whites, and that all black people from across the continent, all black people wherever they are, should be in one country. It's an interesting theory, at the very least.
Mugabe's old Pan-Africanism, which was basically a crazy theory made up by an out-of-touch intellectual in the New World. I don't think
it's like
ever... Anyway, Marius.
I mean, it sounds a bit like Gaddafi 2.0, or the Julius Malema, this kind of dream of, this
African... Malema holds Gaddafi as a personal hero, so it's not...
Yeah, exactly. I just want to also just read out the tweets I saw a little while ago. It's by a guy called Benjamin Fogel. He's a bit lefty compared to us, but sometimes even people on the left can be right, or correct, shall I say. Anyway, his tweet just says, South African political parties are not ready for coalition politics. They're not politically or emotionally mature enough. They do not even possess the sufficient mastery of patronage politics needed to sustain coalitions. And I think he's spot on there. And I've said it before. And I think South African political parties are just simply not mature enough for coalition politics yet. I mean, just as I said, this horse trading of municipalities is a perfect example of that, I think. I mean, imagine in Germany where, you know, the various states are always run by coalitions. If one party said, okay, you guys get Berlin for now, for these next 5 years, we'll take, I don't know, whatever.
Well, I do want to be fair and say, Maurice, that as far as I'm aware, the only parties that have engaged in this blatant horse trading have been the EFF, the PA, and the ANC.
Yeah, that's true. But still, sorry, I just want to... it was just part of my rant. I'm sorry that I wasn't completely sure about the EFF parties.
No, rants are good. Rants are good. Yeah, I must say, I think... that what has become very clear is the total state of chaos that the metros are going to be in. Because at this point, the number of options that are being sort of considered on the table, apart from Tswane, is very, very limited. A place like Joburg, you know, is the DA going to go into coalition there with Action SA and everyone else? But it can't include the PA, but the PA kind of is necessary, but it also can't include the ANC or the EFF, and that's basically 50% of the votes in council. So that's a complete nightmare. I think that we are inching ever closer to what I predicted, I think, from the day of the results, which is that the metros are going to be governed by total chaos in the next 5 years. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you guys think I'm right about that?
Yeah, I think it's plausible. I mean, I do think that there's a route to power for DA, ASA, ACDP, FF Plus, Coalition, and COPE in Tshwane. But I think in Johannesburg, it looks like chaos.
I'm talking about Ekurhuleni. I'm talking about Joburg. I'm talking about Nelson Mandela Bay.
It's a green, yeah. I've said it before. Look to the budgets, the sort of medium-term budgets and the full budgets coming next winter for those municipal councils. You need a 50% plus one majority to pass those budgets. Short of that, you basically get forced into administration, and then using court action, you can force a snap election, unless the administration is going to do something that seems very unlikely. So I think that there might be some snap elections, and I think that would be interesting because parties that have kind of spread themselves thin around the country, if they have to contest in one or two metros and with a longer build-up or a more focused build-up, I think that might shift the balance and forces. Snap elections, people often think, will just come out with exactly the same results, and that does sometimes happen, but international experience shows that often there are serious shifts and that they hurt, generally speaking, the largest party.
I think Nick is frozen. So, but I'll just
Nick is performing what government in city council Zoom meetings is going to look like.
Exactly, yeah. No, but I'll just echo that. I think it's we're in for an even more chaotic 5 years. And, yeah, I mean, in Ekurhuleni, I reckon my money would be on the ANC minority government, and maybe Etegwini, Joburg too. But yeah, whatever. It's going to be crazy. And yeah, it's, I think if you enjoy politics, it's interesting. Yes, you are.
Okay, sorry. I was actually just saying as I froze that my connection it seems to be breaking up. But anyway, that is all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening to a somewhat disrupted episode. But we hope you enjoyed. We hope you found it interesting. And we'll see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Please like this video. Leave it good reviews if you are listening to us on audio. And subscribe to our channel so you can see all of our good stuff. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one. Cheers.